Welcome back to the Critical Moves podcast. I'm Al, and today I'm joined by the awesomeness that is Jack.
Hello, everybody.
Did you have your microphone on mute then?
I had to mess up my Audacity recording knowing that you could still pitch it together because I was worried it did not capture the right playback device after I checked.
Right, so you just weren't prepared, even though we've had this planned for weeks.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Adam's also with us. Adam, can you see what I'm working with here?
Yeah, I can see it, but you know how it is. It could be always worse.
It's difficult. It's difficult. Adam, yep. What's happening tomorrow?
Tomorrow, me and one beautiful Polish lady are going to go to the event and put the rings on each of the fingers, have a party, and basically next day die because of the hangover, and that's called the Polish wedding.
So you're signing your life away?
Happily. I'm doing it, so yes.
Well, congratulations from me, from Jack, from the rest of the team. I'd like to point out that we didn't get invited, which is a little bit disappointing because we'd love to have been there. I haven't been to a Polish wedding before. It sounds interesting. Lots of vodka, lots of food.
You've been invited, but just you know how the post office are working, so I guess you didn't get the invite. You know how it is. And to USA, it goes really long.
Okay.
So, sorry, Jack.
Congratulations, Adam. I'm happy for you.
Sorry. That is pretty good. Congratulations. It was like pure from the heart.
Well, thanks for joining us on the eve of your wedding. And of course, it's not because we're pre-recording this. So it's a couple of weeks away. But thanks for coming on, gents. Today, we are going to talk about storytelling in strategy games. And I should point out that we actually discussed this in episode 10 when we were very new. It was me, Nuno, and Tim. I was excellent. Tim was nervous. Nuno was barely understandable. But that's just the way that things are. But I thought it was a really good idea to revisit this because I think it's super important in strategy games is the narrative, is the storytelling. So let's get into it. Jack, as the youngest member of our team and one who's probably more familiar with more modern games, what's your take on the importance of a narrative when it comes to strategy games?
Yeah, as the resident 12-year-old of Critical Moves, you called me earlier, I would say narrative is important. You also mentioned that Nuno talked about his experience playing Age of Empires 2. I wasn't old enough for that, so Age of Empires 4 has a fantastic narrative. No, really, I think that it is quite contextual to the game and the franchise. Unfortunately, we live in a world now where it's just really difficult for studios to choose to invest money in narratives for games because consumers like faster content, more accessible content that they can sit down and enjoy for shorter periods of time or jump right into the action. And I think we'll kind of cover a lot of that today, but that's my basis. I think if a game can pull off a compelling narrative, especially in an existing franchise, it's absolutely worth it. But I do think that there's going to be strategy games that should just lean into multiplayer and drop the narrative.
So it's absolutely worth it. But I guess the question is, can a game be successful without it? Adam, being a non-native English speaker, you would have had a very different initial exposure to gaming. Is that correct?
You say most 99% of the games are created in English. So when they come to our market, basically they need to be translated. And when I was really young, it wasn't so common for the Polish companies to translate games. So either we had them in English and I didn't understand the word and I played simply by clicking and skipping all the dialogues, or we had some pretty homemade Russian translation for Polish that sounded a little bit like Polish. And I could understand a little bit of it. For example, Joanna Dark is not, it wasn't Joanna Dark, it was Joanna Derika. The guy said that, and I didn't know that that same woman was Joanna Dark, but you know how it is. So, yeah, but again, when the companies in Poland started to emerge in the gaming industry and they started to translate games, and one of the first big Polish translations were Heroes 3 of Might and Magic.
So do you think that that vastly altered your experience when it came to playing those games? Or could you just get by without there being a story?
So you see, like, one time I listened to the guy who translated games into Polish, and he told one interesting thing is that for a game to be a member, like a historic, like a really big thing in a country, it need to be translated. So in case of narrative and strategy game, this is a good point. But if the games has really compelling story, it can make the game being legendary. But if the game doesn't have a story, I guess it's much harder for it to be remembered by a community. So again, back to my, to the subject of my country, when you started to translate games, basically they became a thing, and the first game that were being translated were strategy games in Poland. So that's why they're pretty big in my country.
Jack, can you tell us what we mean when we say emergent storytelling?
I'm a big fan of sandbox games, and I think the reason why is this: there's a larger academic discussion of emergent storytelling in all types of games, which just comes from having a sandbox of gameplay mechanics and narrative, like sandbox coding boxes that can be checked on or off based on the decisions the player makes that builds a narrative in front of them. And for the layman, right, it's just, it's a paradox game. You're going to play the game and you have a random chance to encounter different random events that occur because of different parts of the map that you are, or because of different items you've interacted with. And in the same way, there might be gameplay mechanics like the leaders that you have leading a party, or the traits that your governor has, or things like that, that will determine how those sandbox story elements play out. And some of them can interact with each other. And it's really just, in my opinion, it's a paradox game.
Example, without mentioning Stellaris.
There are no other paradox games besides Stellaris.
Alrighty. Is Crusader Kings a paradox game?
Yes, it is.
And that's an emergent storytelling game, isn't it?
It is, yeah. There's obviously, like I said, there's the traits that your ruler might have, the like interactions that you have in the world space that you like that you've claimed at the start of the game, the interactions that you have with diplomacy with the other rulers from other locations. There's also the DLCs add in different random events, like the tournaments and things like that.
Essentially, an emergent storytelling game is one where you are given a set of tools and then you make the story as you play. So using Stellaris, as you say, the only paradox game, you create an empire, you set a leader, and the events that happen and the interactions which occur is you building your narrative. It's you building your story. That's pretty much sums it up, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So on the other side of the coin from emergent storytelling, you have scripted storytelling. Adam, can you tell me what that means to you?
The base of scripted storytelling is having a writer writing a story for a game. And as we may know, one of the best examples is Warcraft 3 with the amazing story, amazing plot, amazing cinematics. That basically created the whole universe. The StarCraft 2, StarCraft 1, also amazing stories. Maybe Heroes of Might and Magic, okay, the story wasn't great, but the world building there was really good. So this is the case. So basically, there needs to be a person who kind of designed the whole world, and basically there was a writer who wrote the story. This is the core of it.
All right. Jack, how important is having an amazing story to a scripted strategy game?
I think it really depends on the context of the franchise, of the game that you're making, and whether or not, I said before, it's absolutely worth it to have a story, because importance-wise, I think that the art form of video games will have always been uplifted by the existence of a narrative. Whether, even if it's good or bad or too short or too linear, it emphasizes the core of what video games are supposed to be to me, which is an art form, a form of expression. if you have a game that can't serve a story, I don't think that's even possible. I think that's always the case with a capable writer, but there are games that will never be able to capitalize on a story or execute one because of budgetary reasons or production problems. Then they strictly stick to multiplayer. That's perfectly okay. There's a reason why esports games exist and can be an art form on their own. I just think the existence of a narrative, even a bad one, will always have uplifted a game to be closer to like art to me.
And I think that when you mention cost, that's really the crux of the matter when it comes to narratives and storytelling in games. Because, I mean, Jack, you're much more arty than what I am. And stories cost money, don't they? You know, and I'm not saying that coders don't cost money. I'm not saying that the mechanics and how games work doesn't cost money and time and investment to make a quality game. But if you don't have a narrative, if you don't have a compelling story, or even, as you say, just some vehicle to carry the game forward, you are, in some respects, ostracizing a potentially 80% of the strategy game market, because the majority of strategy game players are single players. They want that story experience. They want that progression experience. They don't want to jump into a multiplayer match and get slaughtered by somebody on the side of the world.
Yeah, I think another thing about that too, another angle there is, if you're going to create a new strategy game today and you did not release your game with a map editor, you might piss some people off. And if you release the game with no 1v1s, it would be annoying. And the game only features 2v2s or 4v4s, but those things cost money. It costs a lot of money to build a map editor. It costs a lot of money to build online multiplayer or even custom games. But when you get into the weeds of a narrative, it costs a lot of money for full narration from a voice cast, or the production quality that goes into pre-rendered cutscenes or in-engine cutscenes or certain set pieces or the rights to use certain historical landmarks or locations or things like that, and the location scouting to get the authenticity of those things or the research. And what I mean by that is, if you're not featuring any one of those things I just mentioned for the narrative, it will cost the entire game any possibility of critical acclaim or success on a journalistic level, or praise from critics or just the fan base that's expecting a certain quality of narrative. But if you're missing those things in multiplayer, you'll piss off a good portion of players. But if you fail in any of those aspects in a storyline, your game immediately gets kind of propped into a different category. You can go from AAA to AA to indie simply based off how much you might have spent on your storyline. I think we see that a lot with a lot of these games that we talk about, or people we even interview, just in general, we see people trying to capitalize on telling a story in strategy games, and that clearly takes investors and takes money. Even our conversation with Tatsu kind of got into that, how much it costs and how much it's important to work on a game storyline. And if you don't deliver on all of those things, your game will just be forgotten.
I've had this conversation with the developers of Sanctuary Shattered Sun. Currently, the game features a survival mode. That's the only version of the game that can be played. There's a survival mode and there's a sandbox, and that's about it. But they've realized just how important it is to have a strong narrative campaign. And it wasn't initially part of their plan. And I think when Tatsu was involved, it wasn't part of their plan to have a single player narrative campaign. It was going to be, it's the spiritual successor to Supreme Commander. And I think it was going to be more like Forge Alliance Forever. It was going to be a multiplayer game. But there's been a change in the direction. And when the demo comes out, and it's not going to be until probably the end of 2025 that the demo comes out, the demo will be a single player mission, because they've realized how important it is to have that single player experience in order for the game to be successful. And if you want to have a successful game commercially, a commercially successful game, you need to appeal to the single player audience.
Guys, but let's remember about like what came up to me when you talked, is that basically the game needs narrative in any form. So it in either needs a merging narrative, like for example Civilization games or Paradox games, or it needs like normal simple storytelling, like I don't know, in Warcraft 3. So I guess what you talked about, this developer building a campaign, is that simply the game lacked emerging narrative, and it didn't have campaigns. So basically one feature of the game is missing. So maybe that's the key point of this discussion. They need to be something connected to the narrative. But if there's nothing, there's simply a hole in this product.
Well, I disagree. You don't have to have
of course,
it for a game to be successful.
Of course, but it certainly helps. So you can either design a game in such a way that the narrative is emerging and you don't build a story, or you focus on story like in Tempest Rising and you build a story.
So you mentioned Tempest Rising, so let's talk about that. I've played it. Have you guys played it as well? I think that, Jack, you said that it was based upon the interview that we did with Brandon Castile, where he talked about the narrative of that game. That was what caused you or made you think, do you know, I want to check this game out because it sounds really good. Is that correct?
Yeah, that is correct. That's what I said. I haven't played it yet. It's on my radar now, but it wasn't on my radar until I listened to that interview and specifically heard something about the narrative.
Well, it's a shame you didn't say that you had bought it and you had played it based upon what you heard on Critical Moves, because then we could sell Critical Moves to other developers to say, look, we can get people to buy your game. But by the by, what was it about what Brandon said that made you think this is actually worth checking out now?
I'm not sure how far it was into the episode, but you guys had gotten to a point in the conversation where he was the lead designer, correct?
Mm-hmm.
And he was essentially explaining his thought process behind how to design aspects of the game around the narrative that had been created. And the conversation came to the narrative, and then he was talking about the different factions. And then he brought up one in particular that I did not know existed in the game that to me was like a plot twist as I was listening along. And that's what caught me. It made me feel like that was an interesting narrative turn to me. So now I'm interested in the narrative that they're trying to tell within the story of Tempest Rising.
So the faction you mentioned was the Veti, which is the alien faction that comes in. Not to, and I certainly don't want to piss on the parade of Tempest Rising because I think it's a fantastic game and I've thoroughly enjoyed playing it. But is it not a bit of a trope? I mean, have we not seen that before in video game narratives or in strategy game narratives where you've got two factions fighting and then suddenly there's a third that's introduced, Adam?
I could say that the issue with this storytelling is that maybe it's not a copy, but you could feel it's been heavily based on the tropes. And the, like for me, the most obvious one is Tiberian Wars, Command & Conquer. What's more, these games are really similar in how they play out. That's another issue that we may touch, is that at some point, maybe having a writer come up with some idea is better than simply create narrative that is a copy of other narrative. You know what I mean?
I know what you mean. And when we did that episode with Brandon, I deliberately did not mention Command & Conquer because everything I'd listened to when he'd been interviewed in the past by other media outlets, I just call us a media outlet. Can you believe that? By other journalists or anybody else that we spoke to, one of the first things they said was, so were you influenced by Command & Conquer? And it's like, well, it's clear that it was, you know, and it was deliberately aimed at the people who enjoyed Command & Conquer, Red Alert 2, and all of those games from the mid-90s to the mid-2000s. You know, the DNA is clearly C&C when you play Tempest Rising. And Brandon was unapologetic about that. That was his intent.
But on the other hand, do you really need to copy the plot? Maybe not copy, but base your game's plot on another game's plot. Like, they could come up with another idea, maybe some another twist, different, and still the game in its core would be kind of the Command & Conquer-ish game. But on the other hand, they would have more interesting stuff to tell during the gameplay.
Well, we're going to stray off subject a little bit here, but one thing I always think of when I look at games and movies and books to a degree is, are there any original stories left?
So I would say yes, to that degree. It's really hard to create something really novel in the story department, but for example, in the world building department, I guess we are still having lots of the stories and ideas and fantasy worlds, conflicts that can be created, that we could put these basic tropes that we have in all the media that we watch or play and simply place in the world that we design.
From my artistic point of view, I think that every narrative has mostly been told. Even in world building, the caveat is that writers and narratives at large, they go through phases, like permanent phases, which seems like an oxymoron. But what I mean is, we've gone through a period where humans felt like we were experiencing new stories we hadn't before. Now, I think that we're just not articulating that we're experiencing stories that feel new because we're just stealing as many things as possible from so many different sources and combining them together to get new machinations of that. There are so many popular series and movies and games today that are largely just borrowing plot elements or complete names and mythologies that we're having to reuse over and over again for storytelling that we're just combining together into different versions. I can't tell you how many games now I've played and I love the story, but they're constantly doing a modern science fantasy take on whether or not a particular religion's mythology was actually real. And that's just going to continue being the case because we're going to continue just combining things until we get something that's vaguely new. Ultimately, we're all just going to have a preference for what combination we like the best.
Okay, so that leads us nicely into emergent storytelling as the preferred way of playing games. When I look at Frostpunk, for example, and Frostpunk was a game that we've talked about in the past on the episodes, especially when it came to the morality side of video gaming or strategy video gaming. The emergent side of gaming, or the emergent side of storytelling, means that you're not reliant upon somebody to have a unique idea. It's your idea, it's your story. Adam, do you prefer emergent storytelling, or do you like to have it gifted to you, like a wedding gift, for example?
So, as you may know, I prefer gifted storytelling, as you said. Emerging storytelling is nice, but I really like to feel connected with the characters and to feel connected with the world. And simply with emerging storytelling is extremely hard. Because usually emerging storytelling is being created during a single playthrough. And single playthrough takes you, I don't know, 10 hours, 20 hours, Stellaris maybe longer, but still you play next time, and each time the story that's being emerged is different. So for me, I'm more of the fan of the single plot that goes through all the missions, all the chapters, all the, I don't know, even like versus matches that being like played out over and over again.
But don't you find, or wouldn't you find, and I think Jack's going to agree with me absolutely here, that when you play an emergent story and you get to track the life of a civilization or the life of a particular character, you feel more connected to that person rather than you do someone saying, hey, this is Phil, and he is a soldier in the Earth Defense Alliance, and this is his story. Are you not more connected to the character that you build and the story that you play out rather than what somebody else tells you is the story?
Yeah, I think that especially the first time around, you are experiencing emergent gameplay mechanics that immerse you. They immerse me far faster than a scripted story that wants me to invest myself in some kind of exposition that they're doing at the start of a story. It was actually a point I wanted to make about Frostpunk. You can correct me, both of you, if I'm wrong, but isn't it in Frostpunk that you need to complete the first scenario in order to even do endless mode? Because it's always been a complaint of mine that as much as I love narratives and I just sing their praises, I'm pretty sure you have to complete the scenario all the way through or get to a certain point to unlock like a sandbox mode. Because sometimes when I play a strategy game, I want none of that and I just want what few emergent storytelling beats they give me. So maybe I'm wrong and I'm going on a tirade for the wrong thing, but I'm pretty sure every time I get on Frostpunk, it makes me replay that first scenario because I've just never completed that one all the way through.
Why have you never finished this scenario?
I think mostly I just kind of get distracted pretty easily between strategy games. And I think, I think the main thing is my problem with Frostpunk that I was trying to articulate before is that anytime I haven't completed the scenario, it's going to force me to go through the same exposition and cutscene that happens where they arrive on that like iron train to the pit that they live in. And then it also forces you to go down a linear path of tutorials and resources that they allow you to have at the beginning of the scenario until you can get scouts. And then I've gotten farther than that, but I guess I haven't reached some milestone that they require to do endless mode, because if you're going to build up, if you're going to play a park management game or a city simulator, you probably don't want to get into a scenario when you're playing City Skylines. You want to just hop into the sandbox and watch the pop-ups occur and have an emergent storytelling for how your city expands. That's my take on it.
We all love stories when it comes to playing games, and I think that applies to the majority of people listening to this, because it's certainly the majority of gamers, of strategy gamers. They want a story mode. They want a campaign. It's critical to a game being successful. But there are examples of games which don't have either an emergent story or a scripted narrative, which are successful. And he's not here, but Tim would not go through an episode without mentioning Beyond All Reason. And I think it's important that we do that even when he's not present. It's a non-scripted RTS game where it's either 1v1 or 2v2 or 40 versus 40. I think you can go that high of co-op mode, skirmish mode. There's no story. Is that the reason why it's free?
I think because I played a lot of Bar, and I guess the development of this game came to the point that it's really hard to put the story in it, because the game wasn't designed with the story, basically. So there are some really strange units. Like, nothing makes sense in the department of world building. Yeah, I love this game. First of all, I need to add, I love this game. But the story, it cannot and it won't have a story. And if it will, it will be bad. That's my opinion. And that's my own take on this subject.
Well, hang on. Well, just hold your horses just there, young man, right? Now, maybe it's because you're getting married tomorrow, maybe your brain's not engaged. Beyond All Reason is built on Total Annihilation. It has the arm, it has the core. Total Annihilation had a story. It had two campaigns. So how can you sit there and say that Bar couldn't have a story when it's based on a game? It's not just got the DNA. It's a clone, a modern clone of a game which was released with a full campaign, with two full length campaigns. I mean, that's incorrect, isn't it? What you've said there.
But so may I ask, have you played Bar?
I have, yeah.
When you play this game, you see all the units that were created, like, you could feel that they weren't created, like, and a good example on the subject is, again, Tempest Rising, that they weren't a designer who designed everything to be, to fit in a world they created. It's just the units, they have a purpose, and basically they built for a purpose. That's how I see this game. There's no real world basis for the US. There's no connection. There's no, I don't know, world building made to, I don't know, have some spider units. They simply spider unit because spider units go over the hills. There's, I don't know, this type of tank because this type of tank is strong enough. And for example, when you talked about Total Annihilation, I guess this was the other way around. They thought of the game they want to create, and first of all, they designed the world, and then based on the world that they designed, they created the game they wanted to create. And Bar is totally the opposite way, and in my opinion, simply the world will not be created.
But it isn't. It's the same game. You know, the spider tanks that you mentioned, they can traverse terrain which others can't. I mean, have you played Total Annihilation? I know that Jack tried and
I played really, really long time ago.
Okay, so one of the missions, and it's been a while since I've played, but one of the missions features the spider tanks. They can climb different things, and don't their lasers disable rather than kill? Is that correct?
Okay, so I don't remember this mission, but I remember when I played Total Annihilation.
I'm just asking, in Bar.
Ah, in Bar.
In Beyond All Reason, do the spider tanks, do the lasers just kind of paralyze, or do they actually
kill? I don't remember.
You don't remember. Okay. So the spider tank that you mentioned there, and you say there's no real world basis. Well, that's kind of the point of games. We don't, you know, unless you're Nuno and you want to relive history, we play games for escapism. Stellaris has no real world basis. You know, Beyond All Reason doesn't. You know, these games don't have any real world basis. But the spider tank that you've mentioned was in Total Annihilation. It's not it's not unique to Bar. It's a unit which has been pulled out of Total Annihilation, which had two narrative campaigns. So why can't Bar have a narrative campaign as well?
So when you played, I remember me playing Total Annihilation and the campaign, and what I could remember was like a really thick atmosphere around, like the color of the units. Like everything was kind of darkish in terms of like gameplay. I could feel like this industrial world. And in Bar, basically you have like units and the map, and that's it. Like I couldn't see, I don't know, the designer way of thinking in creating anything there. It was created by a gameplay designer, not world designer. Like you cannot feel sore in Bar.
You're wrong. You're absolutely wrong. It was created from Total Annihilation. It started as the Spring mod, which I think was 20 years ago. They started making Beyond All Reason based upon Total Annihilation, which had a narrative campaign and two narrative campaigns. So to say that Bar doesn't have a narrative campaign because it wasn't designed that way is actually completely incorrect, because the game that it's ripped everything out of, I mean, the wind generators, the solar generators, they're all updated units from Total Annihilation. So Bar does actually have in its DNA two single player campaigns. The Arm had a story, the Core had a story. Those are the two factions in Beyond All Reason, the two factions in Beyond All Reason. They're identical because it's a ripoff, not a ripoff. And that's, I apologize to the Bar developers for saying it's a ripoff. It is a game based upon Total Annihilation, which had that campaign. Jack, what's your thoughts on this? Rather than me and Adam arguing all the time.
Another thing that Adam might be trying to articulate too is, even if Bar borrowed all of its units and design decisions from Total Annihilation 20 years ago, it would be servicing a world closer to Total Annihilation that would make it harder for them to deliver a narrative that would be engaging or different, and not do something like we mentioned with Tempest Rising, where Tempest Rising it was built off of this idea to kind of capture the feeling and the design decisions behind Command and Conquer. Unfortunately, that also might have happened to have been story elements. And it's kind of the same thing with Bar. If they're going to borrow these design decisions from Total Annihilation, then how do they build a story that justifies these units in the world that doesn't justify them the same way Total Annihilation did, for why those things were designed that way or why those units exist? Personally, though, on the defense of Bar needing to have a narrative, I think any writer that's capable, any writer that's worth their weight in paper is basically, they should be able to create a compelling narrative, and an extremely compelling narrative, with whatever building blocks you give them.
Well, I guess they don't even have to create a narrative. They just use Total Annihilation. You know, your units are the same, your commander's the same, you've got the same units in the spider bot. You could just remake those missions.
I suppose. I would personally disagree, because for the reasons I said earlier, from my like philosophical pseudo artistic standpoint of why I think a narrative is required as a very strong point for games to reach a level of art form and mediums, I think that just copying Total Annihilation's narrative, it's not the end of the world. They could do that, but it's not going to ascend the quality of that game for me just because it has missions to complete. If I could just boot up Total Annihilation, and if it worked for me, obviously, but if anybody could boot up Total Annihilation and play those missions back then, I think the intrigue of something like Bar is it clearly has artistic choices and map choices and a whole community behind it. And Tim has mentioned on a previous episode that the community that helps drive Bar's development has proposed multiple different campaign experiences or narrative experiences that just have never come to fruition. And Tim has been involved in discussions about trying to implement something like that in some way, shape, or form, but it just never takes off because of the community driven aspect of that, the disagreements there, or the lack of push. I just think that if they were going to tackle a narrative, it should be original with the units they have, and that somebody could pull it off. But I agree with Adam that Bar started off on the wrong foot if they ever wanted to implement one by borrowing so much from another title.
If you're on YouTube, linked up right now on this video, you'll see there's a link to a video of the top five base builder RTS games, and Bar is on that list because I think it's an excellent game. And when I was putting that video together, I thought, should I include Total Annihilation? Should I include Beyond Our Reason? And having, you know, spoken to you about this in the past, Jack, where you couldn't get TA to work on a modern system, I was like, well, no, Beyond Our Reason is a superior game to Total Annihilation. It absolutely is in every possible way for 2025, you know? So I'm absolutely not taking anything away from Beyond Our Reason. I just think that is the reason why it's still free, why they're not taking them seriously as a commercial product. Is it because they're not willing to consider investing in a narrative campaign? Adam, what do you think?
Okay, so I have completely different take on why Bar is free. In my opinion, it's simply because Bar is simply an open source community driven development game, and that's why it's free. It's not because of the campaign, to be honest. The campaign may be one part of it, but it's minor part. And I also wanted to get back to the subject that Jack touched, and it's really important to distinguish between campaign experience and narrative experience, because there is example of the game without narrative with a campaign, and this is the Stronghold Crusaders. There you had like a 60 missions that basically were kind of disconnected, and they created campaign out of it. They were simply like challenges that you were given. So you can indeed create a campaign, like in Bar, without story, and maybe make community happy in that manner.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that a lot of the time I've seen it where, and I think it's a difficult situation, because I think a lot of games, the narrative is poor. And it's a case of they said, hey, do you know what? We've got this really good idea we've got this really good idea about the mechanics that we want to introduce into a game. But we really need a vehicle to be able to push this along. So let's build a story around the game so that we can say, hey, this is mission one, this is mission two, and these are the reasons why you're moving through rather than you just doing a series of missions. I mean, one of the things that I look at is, and I'm going back again, I'm going way back in time, with Red Alert, they released two expansion packs, what were they called? The Aftermath, and I forget the other one, I forget what it's called. And there was both the Soviets and the Allies got 15 or so individual missions, but they weren't linked. They were just individual scenarios. And with Total Annihilation, you've got the core contingency and one other as well, which were, again, they were just individual missions. So they were saying, this is a particular mission we want you to play. This is the story around that particular mission, but they weren't linked into a narrative campaign. So I don't think you have to have a narrative campaign per se. I don't think it's absolutely essential for a game to be successful, but I think that people want a reason to play something. They want a reason to fight. Last week when we talked about Heroes of Might and Magic, you as a long time player of it, Adam, you said about how there was a story there that you made yourself. And did that story not give you a reason to play? And you also mentioned about there was different scenarios and each one had a different story. Did that story not give you the impetus to go and play rather than they just said, hey, go and do this fight?
The issue in that title is that the campaign missions were simply boring because they were really repetitive. But on the other hand, the world building of Might and Magic universe is simply amazing. As I talked, there's even sci-fi elements happening there. So it's really great. Usually when you play Heroes of Might and Magic, you play scenarios, but they are based in some world that were created, and usually even the scenarios has little plot points set up in the world of Might and Magic. So everything is connected in there. That's why it's a good example of game of amazing world building and mediocre plot.
That's Heroes of Might and Magic in a nutshell, is it? Amazing world building, but shit plot.
Mediocre.
Mediocre. Okay. All right. Gentlemen, we're probably getting towards the end of our time here. What I'd like you to do before we go is, Jack, I'd like you to tell me what is, for you, the best story-driven, and that can be emergent or it can be scripted, the best story-driven strategy game that you've played recently.
Al, you and I are both science fiction people. I'm going to have to say that the very first two or three runs I had on Stellaris and the anomalies that popped up built such an emergent story for me, because Stellaris, just all of their anomalies are references or just completely already done scripts to finished films. I mean, what I love about Stellaris is any one of their anomaly chains or event chains could be an entire science fiction novel or series on its own, but you're experiencing so many of them over the span of an entire galactic empire that it makes you actually feel like you worked your way from just being spacefaring to being a, you know, higher up on the galactic contention scale.
The one that really hit me playing Stellaris was the first time I came across the Blade Runner reference. Have you seen that one?
Is it related to the cybernetics line?
No, is it the Tannhauser Gate?
Okay.
And there's a speech that Rutger Hauer, doesn't he, says, attack ships. Yeah. And that's one of the little Easter eggs in there where there's like a little thing and all it says is tears in the rain as part of the end of that particular anomaly that you've discovered. And you're right. There's so many different things in there where they pick on pop culture, they pick on popular culture and they put it in. But you're absolutely right. I mean, when you talk about Stellaris, and I hate to, we could just be called the Stellaris Moves podcast sometimes, I think, man. But do you have like a particular race or empire that you built that actually means a lot to you in the way that you've played them?
Not really. I'm not the kind of person that gets like, uses the little notepad to write an entire history for my empire, but it really depends on what DLC I'm going to dive into that playthrough, especially if a new one has come out. Sometimes I just play humans because I like the idea of re-experiencing the new DLCs and content, like running into other people. But no, not particularly. I can't, like, I could list the ones that I've done, but I won't do that here.
Adam, what's yours?
It won't be anything original, but I would say Warcraft 3. I replayed this game at least once, 2 or 3 years. And at the moment, for example, Arthas is going into throne room, each time I have chills. It's so good. It's like one of the best plots in video games. Maybe not the best because it's pretty cliche, but one of the most touching plot that's like thrills you when you watch it in video games that I've ever played.
For me, it was going to be Frostpunk.
Oh.
And I apologize for those who listened to episode 10. I know we're now on to episode 39. And I mentioned Frostpunk back then as well. The hit when you, and Jack, you must play it and you must get through that first scenario because the sheer joy you feel when you get through that storm and when you finish that first scenario and, you know, the relief, the actual physical relief I felt from playing a fucking video game and managing to beat it, managing to ensure the survival of these random digital people was immense. It actually really hit me quite hard. So for me, Frostpunk. On that note, we'll bring proceedings to an end. Thanks very much for joining me, Adam and Jack. Adam, massive, massive congratulations from all of us on your impending victories.
Thank you, guys.
We hope you have a long and happy life with your beautiful bride. And, next time you're on, you can tell us how awesome your wedding was, because we're looking forward to hearing about it. Thanks again, gentlemen. Has it been all right? I've not been too difficult to work with today.
No, it was cool. It was a good episode. Really philosophical one, I would say.
When Jack's involved, it's always philosophical.
Yeah.
It's always...
all right.
It's always deep when Jack's involved. I can't say the word, it's too late. Gentlemen, thanks again. It's really appreciated. Listeners, give me a favour. If you're watching this on YouTube, hit that subscribe button. That really, really helps us. Leave a comment, leave a like if you enjoyed it or if you agree or disagree with anything that we've said. If you want to get involved with Critical Moves, we are all ears. You know, come and talk to us. Go to criticalmovespodcast.com. You'll find all of the ways to get in touch there. So, please do.
And you can always ask me questions about organizing a Polish wedding in comments. I'm more than happy to answer them.
Very happy for you, Adam.
To those who...
Thank you.
As someone who's 47, never married, I think you're mental, but, you know, you do you, guy. You do you. Thanks so much for listening. We've been Critical Moves. Take it easy. We'll see you next time.
Cheers.
Bye, everybody.